My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine. My fellow plebs, today's podcast is also brought to you by Moon Mortgage. As the world moves increasingly towards the mainstream adoption of Bitcoin and other digital assets, Moon Mortgage makes it possible to materialize your assets into real estate. Through the collateralization of mortgages with Bitcoin and other digital assets, Moon Mortgage will be launching lending solutions to allow investors to easily leverage their assets to purchase investments in owner-occupied property. Moon Mortgage's crypto mortgage will be launching soon for home buyers in Texas, Florida, and Colorado, and will also be open to investors in most states across the U.S. for investment properties. Welcome to the future of mortgages. Visit moonmortgage.com today to register and learn more. Moon Mortgage Residential is registered with the NMLS under number 235334. Today's episode is brought to you by Gordon Law Group. If you've tried to do Bitcoin taxes yourself, you know how complicated it is. You can spend hours and hours going through your transactions and researching tax forms, and you're still not sure if it's right or if the IRS will come after you. Or maybe you're so intimidated by Bitcoin taxes that you don't even know where to start. Gordon Law Group can help. Ditch the spreadsheets and feel confident with a bulletproof Bitcoin tax return. They can help with IRS payment plans, and they also provide a full range of legal and accounting services for Bitcoin and digital asset startups. Get your taxes done right the first time with the original Bitcoin and digital asset tax pros. Go to GordonLawLTD.com/BTC. As a bonus, they'll send you the ultimate Bitcoin tax guide for free. That's GordonLawLTD.com/BTC.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of FedWatch, keeping you ahead of the curve in Bitcoin and macro. Today, we have a big show. We're going to be talking about Binance, Coinbase, SEC drama. Then at the end, we're going to bring it into some global data, talking about Chinese imports and exports and a European recession. Not just Germany, but all of Europe now has entered recession. So tons to get to. I'm joined, as always, by the one and only CK Snarks. How are you doing today?
What is up, Ansel? I'm doing great, man. We have a lot to talk about. I'm getting hyped for Bitcoin Nashville 2024. That intro teaser video always gets me hyped. To everyone watching, thanks for tuning back into FedWatch. I think, honestly, the only macro show that actually focuses on Bitcoin in a serious way. That's what we try to do. We try to give you that global macro perspective, but we take Bitcoin seriously here. This is a Bitcoin show. Ansel and I think Bitcoin is important to the future. I'm also getting really hyped for Bitcoin Amsterdam. Ticket sales are starting to pick up again. People are starting to remember Bitcoin Amsterdam is happening October 12th and 13th. So I'm really hyped about that. It's going to be at the Westergast Park once again. And honestly, it was such an incredible event last year in 2022. We're coming back same weekend. I think we're going to have double the amount of folks. It's going to be incredible. And y'all, again, here's our agenda. We're talking Binance, we're talking China, talking European recession, talking central bank rate hikes. So much to talk about. Talking Bitcoin price, of course. Ansel, yes. Why don't we talk about Bitcoin and markets a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Bitcoin and markets, my other podcast. You can find it at bitcoinandmarkets.com. I do live streams, not every day anymore, but probably 3 days a week with my community all on YouTube and Rumble and Twitter and Telegram. So just check out bitcoinandmarkets.com for more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, one of my favorite resources, you know, I've been following Ansel and Bitcoin Markets forever. Go support Ansel. And thank you, Ansel, for being a part of what Bitcoin Magazine does with FedWatch every single week. Thanks for speaking at the Bitcoin conference 3 weeks ago. I can't believe it's been just 3 weeks, but we're hard at work. We're working on some cool other surprises on top of Bitcoin Amsterdam and Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville. But Ansel, enough of our shilling. Let's get into macro. Let's jump into some of these big moves by the SEC.
Yeah. So this week started with a bang. Monday, Binance, then Wednesday, Coinbase, both being sued by the SEC. Multiple charges in both cases. There's some slight differences. Binance has 13 total charges. I'm not sure the total for Coinbase, and they are different. So Binance had BNB coin. You know, they also had a wash trading desk that they think was commingling funds and things like that, where Coinbase has their staking program. That was the big, big part that the SEC picked on for them. So major, major exchanges, the largest global exchange and the largest exchange in the United States. So two monsters of the industry. So far, it really hasn't affected the Bitcoin price. CK, what was your initial reaction? I mean, this kind of built up over the years and especially over the last few months. But what was your reaction to these events?
So my wife was actually asking me about this. And I mean, my response to her was that, one, it was not that big of a surprise if you were paying attention. I would say Coinbase maybe a little bit more of a surprise. But, you know, you definitely could have seen that Binance has been in the crosshairs for a minute, especially with this specific SEC, you know, administration. So I was not surprised about Binance. I think the writing was on the wall there. Basically, the very next day was a little bit of a surprise. And honestly, I don't want to spread, you know, rumors, but there are rumors about, you know, the custodian associated with Binance US and many other, you know, services in the US for Bitcoin and crypto that, you know, is probably feeling a lot of heat right now. So I'll just, you know, mention that there. Definitely withdraw your Bitcoin, like wherever you have it, withdraw your Bitcoin. It really does not matter. You know, self-custody is the only custody that is safe. The SEC for Binance US, you know, they put in a motion to freeze withdrawals there. So I don't know exactly the details there. So I'm not going to opine more than other than they, you know, they at least made the motion to try to do that. That's super scary, right? You know, under what criteria do they make those, you know, those motions? And I'm not sure, you know, what the process is for that to actually happen.
Yeah, I saw that they're trying to freeze it. I was a little bit surprised by Coinbase as well. I thought it would eventually come, but maybe not for a couple more years, how slow the SEC usually is going about in this space. Binance, yeah, the writing was on the wall. But overall, I mean, we had the initial reaction in the Bitcoin price. Then it shot right back up, bounced right back into the range it has been in since the middle of March. So the market itself wasn't very surprised at this event, which I think is pretty interesting. I think a lot of people are expecting this to continue the 2022 onslaught, you know, where every time it looked like the market was recovering, there was another shoe to drop. But so far, so good with the Bitcoin price. This really doesn't affect Bitcoin. As I was reading through a bunch of the history of SEC comments on these unregistered securities, they have been remarkably consistent when it comes to Bitcoin. But all of these other coins, they've somewhat flip-flopped a little bit here and there. You could make that argument, but overall, all of these things have always been considered unregistered securities by the SEC, by Bitcoiners, many, many Bitcoiners. I read a new piece by Preston Byrne. He's a lawyer in the Bitcoin space going back to 2014. And back then he wrote an article for Cointelegraph saying that these were unregistered securities back in the day. So everybody has known that they're unregistered securities. Oh, and another one, remember when Michael Saylor was interviewed by Rao Paul for Real Vision? And Michael Saylor was saying, look, this is black and white. These are all securities. To Raul, and he didn't want to believe it. So yeah, I think that this has been known by the space. The crypto bros have been trying to fight this for a very long time, and it looks like it's just finally caught up to them. Any comments on that, CK?
Well, I think it's super important that this is a big separation between Bitcoin and crypto, is and why like advocating for Bitcoin as part of crypto makes way less sense, because crypto has so much baggage, right? And I want to give a shout out to BPI, the Bitcoin Policy Institute, but really they're the first, you know, I would say, why am I blanking out on the term? Just think tank for Bitcoin that is positioning content for legislators, and they're not wasting time advocating for, you know, rewriting securities laws, right? They're focusing on protecting mining, protecting the ability to self-custody, protecting the ability to run a node. Like, that is the focus. So Bitcoin is in a league of its own legally, and that's why Bitcoin is a much more sophisticated way to subvert the state than these other things. But with that being said, you know, these other things, is the SEC even effective with trying to regulate them, right? Like, obviously, like, it was clear as day that, you know, there's securities fraud happening and that there was unregistered securities that were being traded on these exchanges. But is the SEC helping Americans in any way? You know, there's a lot of gains to be made if you could play that market correctly. Not to say that there's not a lot of losses and rugs and fraudulent activity, but there's a lot of that stuff in the regulated market too. Like, there's so many meme ETFs. Like, you think these are like, you know, proper, you know, investment vehicles? Like, absolutely not. So, you know, the SEC was around the entire time with FTX. They didn't stop that from happening. They didn't protect anyone from that. So again, I think that it's easy to say that, you know, this was coming, and it's easy for Bitcoiners to say that, like, this is why Bitcoin is better, and it is, and Bitcoin is differentiated on many levels. But at the same time, I think we should look at the SEC and say, great, good job. You know, you got Coinbase. You know, they're pretty much like in your office every single week. Good job. You got them. And question, are they even effective at all? And I don't think like we should be like cheering them on. It's like, man, you got Coinbase like 5 years too late. Like, when did they start offering shit coins? Like, this has been obvious, right? So I don't have a lot of trust, faith, and respect for the SEC as an institution. Long-term listeners of this show know that I think that they're entirely inefficient and they don't protect Americans in any way. But at the same time, this is definitely foreseeable. So I'll get off my soapbox now.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee, a city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.
Plebs, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, then you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's a free and a paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts Dylan LeClaire, Dr. Jeff Ross, and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com.
I wanted to bring Chris in here, producer Chris, because he was filling me in on the Binance stuff. I read all the stuff for Coinbase, but didn't dive into the Binance stuff yet. So, Chris, could you give us some highlights on what your takeaways were from the Binance filing?
Yeah, definitely. And a huge shout out to Sam Callahan. He's a market analyst over at Swan. He had a deep dive in these statements. I know the allegations against Binance was like 130 pages, 140 pages. So long allegations. Like you said, they're slightly different than Coinbase's, which is different. So Binance was obviously hit with the one that's saying basically they're operating an illegal securities brokerage. That's pretty obvious. That's kind of trying what they're going after Coinbase as well. Coinbase, they also included that they're running staking, which is a yield service, which the SEC was not. But the difference between Binance and Coinbase, which is really scary, is they also accused Binance of fraud. So in the statements to the SEC, there was banned CEO A and banned CEO B. So in there's basically been two Binance US CEOs over the last couple years that are not CZ that stand out as banned CEO A and B. Obviously, they were their names were removed or redacted for privacy reasons. But Catherine Colley is one of them who was there shortly and basically found that she was not running the ship. When she was trying to do things, she saw like literally hundreds of millions of dollars of crypto tokens moving. And she's like, I didn't authorize this. What's going on? Basically, I think she found out that CZ was the one doing this and ultimately stepped down or resigned very shortly afterwards. The other one that banned CEO B is a lot of people are speculating is Brian Brooks. So like I said, these are speculations who the CEO A and B were, but Catherine Colley and Brian Brooks come to mind. As you know, Brian Brooks was at a couple different places. I forget where he was. Wasn't he at Coinbase for a little bit as their legal counsel? Mm-hmm. Basically took over as CEO of Binance. He was there for 3 months and then left very quietly.
He was part of the Trump administration too.
Yes, yeah. So
I think the office of the comptroller, one of these freaking offices.
Yeah, but definitely.
He's the one who made it so banks could custody crypto and Bitcoin.
Yeah,
and
so
then he left and went to Binance. And
yeah,
then
definitely.
Shortly left at Binance immediately after that.
Yeah, and a lot of people know Brian Brooks more because he's done a lot of talks against to Congress and Senate talking about, you know, the differences of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies in general, obviously in the role and positions that he's been in. But yeah, I guess one of the big things that I wanted to highlight that Sam brought up is two firms were also listed. They were technically marketing firms, Sigma Chain, I'm not even sure if that's a crypto or whatever, and Merit Peak. So these were separate entities that were basically wash trading large sums of money before a token would be listed. So they had access to Binance accounts and they were basically pumping up and making it look like there's way more activity or 24-hour volume of these random tokens, like a few hours or a day before they get listed on Binance. So it's a way of saying like, look, there's all this action going on all these other chains. The thing that makes them really dangerous is that it has been tied that CZ is technically the owner of these two chains or the two companies or entities. So one was Sigma Chain and the other one was Merit Peak. Those were the ones listed in the SEC filing. So very, very scary. I mean, it's one thing to say you're operating an illegal securities brokerage and say like, oh, the rules weren't clear. That's kind of your argument. It's another thing to be accused of blatant wash trading and fraud. So yeah, these are huge allegations and we'll basically see what, you know, obviously I think these are going to go on for a long time. I'll caveat one other thing or two other things real quick. I know it's CK brought up a point. It's like, why didn't the SEC go after them, you know, 5-6 years ago? Well, it seems that like obviously in the midst of like they were in a bear market, maybe they thought these things were going to die and go away. Then we saw a historic bull run or, you know, cyclical bull run. And it's not in their favor to hamper down when things are going well, because then it looks like those companies can point as the SEC being the bad guy. Hey, they hampered the bull run. They're the one that killed it. We've seen now a 12 to 18 month bear market. And basically now's a good time to basically kick them while they're down or, you know, take them out back and put them out to pasture, so to speak. Yeah. Last thing I wanted to bring up was it's been noted that basically Gary Gensler, chairman of the SEC, has higher aspirations for his political career. So obviously he's chairman of the SEC now. There's been rumors that he would love to be Treasury Secretary if Janet Yellen were to ever step down or if Biden were to ask for re-election. He would love to have that position. So even at his comments recently were like, we don't need digital currencies, which is different from a guy that ran a course at MIT talking about the ins and outs of Bitcoin. Basically, he was saying we already have a digital dollar, digital yuan, digital yen. I'd love to get your comments on that yen and CK of just like the laughable, you know, this guy ran a course about talking about Bitcoin to say that we have digital fiat currencies and basically making them seem synonymous.
Yeah, well, I have a slightly different take on that. I think that comment was misinterpreted by most people. I think what he was saying is that we have, or these things aren't innovative, that altcoins aren't innovative. It's not like by regulating them, we're going to chase innovation offshore. We already have digital securities. We already have digital currencies. We don't need this space unregistered or unlicensed unregistered securities going on out here. These are just scams. We already have all of this innovation that we need. So that's how I interpreted it. CK, what were your thoughts on that?
So I didn't actually listen or read the statement, but based on how you described it, Chris, and based on how you described Ansel, you know, I kind of tend to feel the same way as Ansel's. You know, I think there's more disparaging the illegal securities industry, aka the crypto industry. But with that being said, you know, I think right now where Bitcoin is legally is differentiate, continue to be outside of the scope of the target. And, you know, if the chairman of the SEC, who has political goals, you know, to join the Treasury, saying all we need is the digital dollar, that makes sense to me. You know, that sounds like a narrative that he would be saying.
Yeah.
But the key thing is he's not making Bitcoin a target. So that, I think that's how I would kind of interpret what I'm hearing. Again, this is like hearsay. This is like me opining on hearsay. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I think a lot of people misinterpret Gary Gensler, and some of it is pushed by the crypto bros. So they will pick up on something, they'll push out a misleading, out of context comment and say, oh, Gary Gensler's changing his tune completely. I actually saw a post on Twitter about this where they wrote a response, and it came out yesterday. A bunch of people, I think, got together and wrote a response to this action and saying how horrible it was and how much Gary Gensler has flip-flopped in just 2 years. And they took a quote from one of his testimonies in front of Congress in 2021, where he said that there is no working framework for, or there's no framework for crypto exchanges. And they were saying, see, he said it back then that he wasn't in charge of it. But if you go to the testimony, which I then did, and I read through that particular answer, he said that all of these things fall under their authority, but there is no framework to regulate them. So that to me says that there's no special unique framework for the crypto exchanges and crypto assets. There, it's all just falls under the typical SEC securities authority. So people need to be careful about misinterpreting Gary Gensler. And I'm not saying that he's perfect or great, like CK said there a few minutes ago about how is the SEC even necessary? That's a very deep debate that we can get into some other time. But I do think that this particular action shows that they are at least not corrupt, right? Like I thought a lot of the time, the reason why maybe the SEC wasn't going after the crypto bros and all these coin casinos was because there was lobbying going on, like we found out with Sam Bankman-Fried. There was just corruption in general, and they were trying to pit these altcoins against Bitcoin to hold Bitcoin down. Like that was the kind of the conspiracy train of thought in my mind. But this kind of shows that that is not the case, that they are trying at least to stamp down on the fraud that we all knew was fraud. Even Coinbase knew that they were stepping around the, you know, trying to stay out of trouble, because in their filings and in their vetting process for listing of tokens, you know, they give lip service to the Howey test. They give lip service to all these things. And they say, oh, but we do our own vetting. Well, obviously they knew that they were overstepping the law. And so, yeah, that's, I think we can look at it both ways, that does the SEC actually work, or is it as corrupt as we thought? So I don't know. There's two ways to look mm-hmm. at that.
Yeah. I mean, go for it, Chris.
Yeah. And Coinbase was trying to self-regulate to your point, Ansel, they were trying to do like stepping around the regulators. They had a scoring scheme of 1 to 5, I believe it was. 5 being like, this is dangerous, shouldn't be listed. 1 being it's good, we're going to list it. But Coinbase actually, the SEC complaint brought up that they were inconsistent in how they were. So like sometimes they would list things that were 5, like, yep, this is risky, we shouldn't list this, but then would still offer it on their exchange. So it's like, then what's the point of your freaking scoring system? If you're going to say it's a 5, it's like, oh, well, you know, we want retailer. I don't even know what the response will be to that, but it's just very funny. They're like, oh, 1 is safe, 5 is bad. Like, but yet they listed things that were 5. So go figure.
Well, yeah, because they knew the founders and they knew who had invested in the seed round, the pre-sale, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, we were all there when Coinbase Ninja launched Bitcoin Cash, and there was a massive Bitcoin Cash run up before and after that. So there's been some dubious time things happening there for a while. There's been people who've already been convicted of wash trading and no, not wash trading, but like, what's it called? Trading on insider information.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure as you keep digging, you're going to find more skeletons, honestly. But with that being said, you know, it's clear that Binance, you know, has some issues. And with Binance US, like when Catherine Cooley, you know, kind of quit and stepped out of crypto and Brian Brooks started and then quit pretty much immediately. You know, those were definitely red flags. Those were definitely red flags. And Ansel, I think you make a good point about the SEC. You know, maybe this shows that they're not as corrupt as we once thought that they were. But honestly, I don't think it matters. You know, one, they are corruptible. I think that is clear. Maybe there's one guy in here who has, you know, who's trying to, you know, do the right thing. But the other, fault of the SEC is that they simply cannot scale. So, like, of all the scams that are out there, of all the issues that are out there, of all the things that are harming unknowing investors, you know, what percentage of them have they dealt with effectively? Okay, since whatever time, okay, let's say since Gary Gensler started, or when James Clayton, the previous director. And it's tiny. And the thing is, like, it's expanding exponentially. Like, they're asking for more funding now. This is what Gary Gensler's asking for. He's like, I need more funding to fight this. And there's no way it's going to scale fast enough. So again, I think it's like, can they even be effective is the real question to ask.
Yeah, just to play devil's advocate on that, I mean, I think it's kind of always been that way. There's always been scams. They're never like proactive in the history of the SEC, pretty much. They've always been retroactive and coming in after the fact to try to set the guide rails for the space. And one thing that one of the complaints from Coinbase is that they are trying to regulate through enforcement. Well, what do you think the Howey test is? The Howey test was created in a court case. So it was created through precedents. That's how they go back and they try to set the guardrails. So maybe not that they can't scale, but that they're designed in a different way to try to, I mean, it's a hard job because they're trying to regulate this. And I'm sounding like an apologist for the SEC, but they're trying to regulate this system while keeping regulation at a minimum. And so you kind of have to set up the system to be self-policing in a way. And so they've done that through all of these licensing operations that you have to do to get to launch an IPO, to be a broker, to do all these things. And so that's kind of the way they go about doing it. Maybe it's not meant to scale. It's meant to always play catch up and get the next cycle. What do you think about that, CK?
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that you're the status apologist on the show, Ansel. So nothing has changed here.
Please no.
But at the same time, you know, I think we've spent a lot of time on the subject. I think you bring up some really good points. Maybe that's the case. I still, you know, as someone who has like a more typical Bitcoin view, maybe not the new Bitcoin view with people cheering on the SEC. You know, I don't like I would take shitcoins over statism. Like, I think the shitcoins are actually attacking statism. And I think that in the long run, like, that's good for Bitcoin. But, you know, some people think that we would prefer to align with the state to attack the shitcoins. I just think that that's misaligned. That's my personal impression. I think everything is good for Bitcoin. So this differentiates Bitcoin from the shitcoins. It further creates that very clear differentiation. You know, the waters are still muddy on Ethereum here, but Bitcoin is clearly the differentiated. I think that that's good. And, you know, ultimately, you know, these regulators are doing their best. That's taking up resources, and that those resources are spent away from attacking Bitcoin and Bitcoiners. I think that's good for Bitcoin. So that's my logic. Yeah.
Are shit coins the regulatory moat for Bitcoin, that like they go after them and they can't, Bitcoin kind of like is like protected by that because they have other things they actually have to go after?
Well, there's many regulatory moats, but yeah, sure. I think definitely shit coins are a massive distraction for regulators.
Yeah, well, I had to defend myself there, CK. I am in this show right now feeling like the government apologist, but that doesn't mean that the SEC model works. I'm just trying to describe how it is. And that's one of the complaints that I have about people, or responses, I guess, that when people are saying that we're cheering on the SEC, even Satoshi, like I try to put myself on Satoshi's team and say, like, look, he recognized that there are trusted third parties, right? And that they will be corrupted. He realized human nature, and that's why he designed Bitcoin to be decentralized and get rid of trusted third parties. So I don't think we can say, oh, trusted third parties are inefficient. I mean, they're just a fact of the world, and you kind of have to design your systems around that. And that's what Bitcoin has done. So there's my defense. How is that?
Totally. Well, and again, like Satoshi was very, very elegant with everything that he did. Yeah. And that is why Bitcoin is in this position, as well as Bitcoin being the first to actually work. I think that was huge too. And it's a one-time invention. So, you know, I think everything else is, you know, clearly run by a team, and that's the kind of issue with almost everything else out there. Y'all, can we wrap this subject up? I'm sure that everyone is sick of us non-lawyers opining on securities laws. Let's jump into Bitcoin chart so us, you know, non-analysts can opine on Bitcoin price.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, I'll head backstage. Chris. Good talking to you guys.
Yep.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, let's bring up the first Bitcoin chart then. This is the daily chart, and you can see the Binance reaction on the big red candle just a few candles ago, breaking down kind of this below some support levels that we've had, instantly bouncing back and once again entering this range that we've been in since middle of March. That right now the 50-day moving average in green is sloping downward and separating itself from this red zone up top. And that what the way I interpret this in the charts is that there will be resistance around certain levels because that's where people place their bids and their asks, right, for their trades. When these two things separate, that separates the strength of those two zones at the recent highs and at the 50-day moving average. And so now we can kind of chip away and break through different resistances because they are less concentrated. But CK, what do you see when you look at this chart? Is it looking uber bearish to you, or can we break out?
Well, you remember last week I was scared. Yeah, I would say right now neutral. You know, there's been bullish signs. There's been signs of further resistance. You know, I'd probably say your analysis is accurate. It's weird to think of Bitcoin 2019, but during Bitcoin 2019, there was a massive pump up to 13K. And then following that, it went back down to 6K. So that was really painful. I don't think anyone really saw that coming. And from a like straight four-year cycle perspective, we're pretty much there right now. The pump up happened, you know, a few months earlier into the year. It wasn't in June, but I kind of get that gut feeling that we're in the slide down right now, and we could definitely go to places lower than anyone is anticipating before we go back up. So, you know, maybe we hit back 16K again. I don't know. I'm not convinced that we go higher here. I still feel uncertain, but I would say I'm kind of in that 50-50 territory. But I definitely, you know, anecdotally, I get that 2019 vibe.
Okay. Well, let's take a look at the weekly chart and see if this, you said last week this one was more bullish. We're still pinching between the, can we bring that up, producer Chris? Uh-oh, technical difficulty here. Let's see if we can go to the weekly. One more try. There we go. Okay. Oh. So the orange line here is the 200-week moving average, and that Bitcoin had never broken below that until this cycle, because this cycle did not go as high as other cycles had. Mm-hmm. But you can see we're still holding that on by our fingernails onto that support. But what I highlight here is the 50-week moving average, which is roughly the 1 year moving average, right?
Yep.
It is now sloping back in a positive direction. And that is a huge thing in Bitcoin's history. It's a very, very strong signal that when that starts shifting back positive, you know, the bull market has definitely started. So CK, this is a more bullish chart. Would you agree with that?
No, definitely more bullish chart. And, you know, the 50-day moving average there, definitely looking bullish. The other scary part is sitting right on the 200-day moving average. So that's why I feel 50-50 right here, because, you know, both those indicators are saying kind of different things.
Yeah, and also we can look at this from the respect of the Binance story that we just talked about, Binance and Coinbase. The Bitcoin price really hasn't been affected, which I think is overall bullish. You know, would I say that in bull markets, the bad news just slides off your back, right, as you continue higher. So that would be another confirmation that we are in a bull market. Any other thoughts on price, or should we move on to our macro stories?
Yeah, I mean, this feels, you know, kind of again around that time period where it's like that last inch of the bear market. So I still think that there's like more pain, whether that pain is just chop or whether that is taking a leg down before we start like having real bullish momentum. But I do feel like we're pivoting from straight bear to now it's kind of like, you know, it's changing direction slowly. So I think that that's kind of where we're at.
Awesome. All right, let's go to our next story, getting into global macro. That's one of the, I think, unique aspects of the show is we talk about the important Bitcoin news and Bitcoin price, but also we get into the global macro situation. And this week, one of the big news items out was that China's export and import numbers came in way under expectations. Let me read a little bit from this Financial Times article. So Chinese exports contracted more than expected in May on weaker global demand for the country's goods, as the world's second largest economy struggled to revive growth after a pandemic-induced slowdown last year. Exports contracted 7.5% compared with the same period a year earlier. China's GA of Customs, or sorry, General Administration of Customs said, well below analyst forecasts of a 0.4% fall, according to a poll conducted by Reuters. Imports declined 7.9% year on year in April, while exports had climbed 8.5%, falling back from an expected jump in March. And on the next slide, I have a chart of this. And this is, you can see month by month, exports and imports. The reopening has been a dud. They did get a little bit of a jump in exports in March with the reopening, but it has now gone all the way back into the negative. Imports are another story too, because, you know, China as an export, import, export type economy, to make these products, they need to import all of the raw materials. They import their energy, they import everything, manufacture it, and then ship it back out. Well, if imports are dropping like this, you can tell that this is not necessarily some sort of trade war or something like that. This is a cyclical downturn that we can see all over the globe. One more thing I wanted to say about this is that this is dollars. This is dollar volume, not actual trade volume. So if, you know, prices are 10% higher than they were last year, but exports still fell by 10%, that means, you know, the real volume is down 20% or whatever the math works out to be there. So this is very, very bad for the Chinese economy. CK, any comments on China?
You know, I feel like every single show, we just keep bringing up more stuff confirming the thesis of the show. So this has been the thesis for a long time. We've called BS on red hot China reopening, despite much bigger macro accounts than Ansel, you know, saying contrary. And, you know, 4 months later, 5 months later, I think the track record speaks for itself. And, you know, we've been doing this for almost 2.5 years now. So it's been a long time doing FedWatch and you know, bringing out that macro signal, especially around China, especially around Europe. And we've been bullish US too. So we've been bullish US on this show. And, you know, on the other show on Bitcoin Magazine, now on the Bitcoin Magazine channel, but also on his personal channel, The Breakup, Nolan's channel, he is bullish on the U.S. in particular as well. So I think it's important to, like, catch on to these themes. And obviously, we're bullish Bitcoin. So, you know, hopefully we're directionally correct on all of these things. We're going to keep broadcasting every single week, though.
Yeah, recession doesn't mean bearish Bitcoin. Recession means if it's driven by a dollar shortage, which that's my thesis. So if that's the case, you know, people look for monetary alternatives, and that's actually very positive for Bitcoin. So yeah, also, when we look at the China slowdown, we can also look at the oil prices. A lot of people were predicting $300 a barrel oil. I remember Zoltan Pozsar putting out there that this was going to be a major commodity bull market. And that has been exactly wrong. Why we have been calling bearish oil, bearish commodities, that shows that the global, the demand for these things are sliding because of a global recession. But we also see it in Europe. Let's go to the next story here. And that is, Number six, there we go. Europe enters recession after data revisions paint far gloomier economic picture. Let me just read some of this. So the U.S. may have avoided a technical recession so far, but Europe's run has just ran out. According to the latest data revisions by European statistics agency Eurostat, the Eurozone economy was in a technical recession in the first 3 months of 2023 after downward revisions of growth in both the first quarter and the final quarter of 2022. Gross domestic product for the 20-country Eurozone fell by 0.1% in the first quarter compared with the fourth. That's confusing. So let's just move on to the next sentence. This was the second consecutive 0.1% decline after the fourth quarter of 2022 printed a 0.1%, negative 0.1%. So not just Germany, which we reported on last week, but now it is the entire Eurozone that has slumped into recession. And do I have another chart on this? No, I do not. So CK, what is your comments? One of the things we have talked about, yes, is being bearish on China, bearish on Europe, less bearish on the United States, kind of bullish on the United States. And that is exactly what has going on. What do you think about the going forward? Do you see any difference happening? Do you see anybody turning the corner here, or is the future still more recession, or, you know, have we bottomed?
Oh man, it's difficult to tell. Crypto Billy in the comments saying which definition of a recession are they using? You know, I definitely vividly remember the changes of recession definition in the US when they were trying to debate, is the US technically in a recession?
Europe uses a plain two quarters of negative GDP. So Europe is very plain.
Well, hey, that's better than honestly than changing definitions. But, you know, the thesis of the show, I'm not even going to bring an original thought. The thesis of the show is that the overall dollar economy, which is the global economy, is going to continue to grind down. Right. And the Bitcoin economy is going to continue to grow and become bigger. So that's the thesis of Bitcoin Magazine. That's why we do the Bitcoin conference. That's why we do the Bitcoin Magazine. That is why we are investing in this space and investing our time in this space. So that's our thesis, right? Is the Bitcoin ecosystem is going to grow. And, you know, that's what we think. It's that dynamic. It's and the dollar system is destroying itself. The sub-dollar assets are crumbling. There's not enough dollars in the system. And it's affecting everything. And, you know, those negative economic consequences compound. And Bitcoin's positive economic economic consequences compound. I think that there's just going to be a turning point. Personally, I'm bullish. I think it's this decade. But, you know, personally, I think it's definitely in our lifetime where the Bitcoin economy is as big as the dollar economy. And then at that point, there's no benefit of being in the dollar economy anymore. You can just switch over and you have most of the benefits and all the benefits of Bitcoin. So I'm very bullish on that dynamic. And I think Ant will agree that for the most part, you know, that's kind of the underlying thesis of the show of how the existing system and the Bitcoin system will kind of interact over time.
Exactly. They're the old decrepit system versus the new green shoots of Bitcoin. So that
perfect.
The question I had about where are we going? And well, the central banks, they have their ideas. So let's go to the next story. This is Australia. I think that's the first one that I have here. Australian central bank hikes their equivalent to the Fed funds by 25 basis points after pausing the previous month. So, you know, we had all of the bank problems starting in March and going into April. People were scared. So a lot of these central banks paused. Well, they think that the overriding fear is still inflation. So these central banks are starting to hike once again. I took a little excerpt from this one. So recent data indicate that the upside risks to the inflation outlook have increased and the board has responded to this. This further increase in interest rates is to provide greater confidence that inflation will return to the target range. Again, confidence, that's another part that we talk about on the show here. They don't actually think they mechanically do anything. They are there to provide greater confidence in you know, the ability to rein in inflation. Moving on next is down to Canada. Canada also paused last month, and they had a surprise rate hike. So this is, they've hiked 25 basis points as well to a 22-year high. So now that leaves it up to the ECB and the Fed. What are they going to do this month? We will be reporting on it here on FedWatch, of course, coming up in the next week or so. The Fed will decide if they're going to raise 25 basis points or they're going to pause. So CK, any comments on how these smaller central banks are behaving and what this means, you know, going back to that same question, what do you think that they see? Are they completely blind that they don't see the recession happening? They're still seeing inflation. What's your take?
I mean, my take is that this system is so difficult to try to understand that it's clear that not even the central bankers understand it. And that their actions are not quantitative. That's something that you bring up all the time, Antle, like quantitative easing, quantitative tightening. None of that is actually quantitative. It really is kind of like a, all right, 50 basis points. Oh, now we're going down to 20 basis points. It's not super calculated. So they can't have the right answer. They can't. So going with the narrative, going against the narrative, they're just punching down on the system no matter what. So I don't know. I don't have a whole lot to add. It'll be I'm a lot of popcorn as a Bitcoiner who has exited largely out of that system. You know, I feel less exposed. I'm interested to see how things play out. Definitely eating popcorn. Definitely interested to see what the ECB, if they're going to now go with this new pivot that other central banks are doing, or if they're going to stick with their direction of pausing. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested to see what's going to happen. Ultimately, this is why Bitcoin's better. We can verify it to the SAT. And we know, you know, the one thing that we know 95 years from now is that the block subsidy will be 37 sats. We know nothing else really, but we know that if Bitcoin works, it'll be 37 sats. And that level of knowledge into the future, that level of understanding and verification and clarity into the Bitcoin system, it's you can't even compare it to, you know, the central bank system that we operate on right now that literally has the high priest of fiat. And like, you know, they're doing this 10 basis points, 20 basis points,
it's definitely not
reparations.
It's definitely not quantitative like they try to tell us. Like they have some quants in there crunching formulas to find out what the exact right policy
Antle,
is.
The economy must pay its reparations to the overlords of the economy. So that way we can have confidence to go up again. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Yeah, I want to say that my take on this about these central bankers is they would rather be wrong and look powerful. You know, they'd rather look like they made a mistake instead of looking impotent, right? So that is why I think they've had increased their rate hikes here because, you know, hey, if the market goes up and they increase the rate hikes, what are they doing? So anyways, that is my take. That's all I have. Anything else add? Anything else you want to bring up, CK?
I mean, your take is way more 3D chess than mine, which shows how Ansel is thinking on another level than your boy. But, I just like to call regulators incompetent, honestly, and try to contrast with Bitcoin. Ansel, since we have a couple minutes extra here, yeah, you know, should we bet on what Bitcoin price will be when I come back on the show? So I'm not going to be back on the show for the next, I think, 3 weeks. So we're going to have 3 weeks of Ansel and Nolan most likely as a special guest host.
I'm looking forward to
that. So in 4 weeks from now, when I come back, Bitcoin price predictions.
Higher.
Higher?
Yep. Surprisingly higher, I think. But I'm in the
so breaking right 30K.
Now. I think, yeah, 3 weeks from now, we'll be close to that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I come back 4 weeks from now, so definitely higher by then.
Definitely higher, yeah.
Okay, so Ansel says higher than 30K. Yep. I'm going to remember that. I'm going to put out a prediction too. I would say the most likely scenario is we're at the same price. The next most likely scenario is a gut punch lower, either by the time I come back or before that time, we're going to get a gut punch lower. And the least likely scenario is is much higher, much higher. So I'm going to go a little bit more bearish here. I think we got more pain, but you know, I do think that the bull market is very close. I just think we got that those last few punches to earn it.
I'm waiting.
We must
for
pay the reparations, Ansel.
I'm waiting for Gensler to come out and be like, "Hey, Bitcoin is the only commodity. If you want to be in this business, you got to be using Bitcoin as the unit of account and all this stuff." And man, if he says something like that, boom.
I don't think anyone cares what he says. The market doesn't care what he says.
Of course they do. The big pools of capital care what Gary Gensler says.
True, but then they still have to make products. I don't know. We'll see. Y'all, before we leave, I want to take a chance to shill these beautiful magazines. I'm really proud of this one. We call out the fraud. Maybe we'll be calling out more fraud in future magazines. Love our most recent one. Been working really hard packing these things, shipping them out. Almost every single magazine has been shipped at this point. Thank you to everyone for your patience. To anyone who wants to get a new Bitcoin magazine, store.bitcoinmagazine.com. Use code BMLive to save 10% off there, as well as tickets to Bitcoin Amsterdam, October 12th through the 13th. Tickets to Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville. That is going to be July 25th through the 27th. And y'all, I have to say thank you again to everyone. We have sold now officially thousands of tickets to Bitcoin 2024 Nashville. The pre-sale has been absolutely red hot. It's still flowing. Ticket prices are staying at these levels through the end of this month. So you have to the end of this month to get the best price possible. Use BM Live to save an additional 10%. So that is really the best price possible. And then ticket prices are going up. So really, really excited for all of these events. Last show, you can bundle Bitcoin Amsterdam and Bitcoin 24. You get an even better price if you do that with BM Live. So bundle, I'll see you in Amsterdam Ansel, I will see you in 4 weeks on the show. Excited to be watching your analysis with Nolan. Peace.
All right. Thanks, guys. What is up, audio listeners? Thank you for enjoying another episode of FedWatch. Down in the show notes, you will find all the appropriate links to our social media, the original version of this podcast, and community links. Also, check out bitcoinandmarkets.com, where I put out a free weekly newsletter every Friday. And there you can also help support the show by signing up to become a paid member. See you next time.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee, a city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.
Plebs, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, then you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's a free and a paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts Dylan LeClaire, Dr. Jeff Ross, and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at bitcoinmagazinepro.com.